Troops, so we can get started here. I understand you had a very wonderful session here today with Tom Brohammer and the other troops. How many of you still have questions that have not been answered? Last night we came up with about 7 areas in which you thought if you were more clarified you would be improved. How many of those questions are still unanswered? Yes, sir.
I don't know how to do a PBS number.
Well, we're going to do that tonight. Good. Anything else? Here's the man who's going to do it. The man who dreamed is... I'm going to do the third fraction, okay. Anything else? Was that touched? Yes, sir. Money management tomorrow. We do that on Sunday. What we do is we come into the temple with our money management.
What's the matchup
I was told it was covered this afternoon. If it hasn't been covered this afternoon, Jimmy will review it tonight. Didn't you get a matchup this afternoon?
No.
Brohammer told me he gave you the matchup in detail, and so did Dick Schmidt. That makes Jimmy feel real good. Now he's got it. Now he's got a place.
No, but we didn't specifically say, "Bang, this is the matchup."
Oh yeah, with my clients, Dick, you've got to specifically tell them what you're giving him.
You can't
tell them what you give them, then you tell them you told them, then you tell them you told them what you told them. That's yes, sir.
That description of the Jazz Island Martino race. That was a matchup.
You, according to Tom, you all did a marvelous job on that. He said I should have been here because you would have been proud of these people. They did the matchup on that race and got the matchup even closer than any computer program got it. Now that's the story I heard.
Then they woke up, I guess, and they forgot that we talked about it.
Do you feel sleepy after you wake up in the morning? I mean, you feel full after a big meal? You got it.
I knew they seemed smarter than they actually were.
Tom, you dazzle people so much that they just, in the light of your own brilliance, they like to appear smarter than they... That'll be taken care of. Anything else that was you feel was left out? Now that you know, I didn't know Tom was in the room, or I wouldn't have even brought it up.
No,
he did good. Did you do good? And we didn't applaud for Tom. Be real nice to him. And if you have a calling card, you might give it to him. You might put your name in the book. He's got to go.
In fact, I've been in a room ever since the time appointed for all of us.
Oh, I didn't know you're so. You're so unobtrusive back there. I just found out, folks, that we are not a cult.
When this man starts talking...
I beg your pardon, sir?
When this man starts talking, anybody who disagrees feels humble.
Well, Brohammer, yeah, he does that to all of us.
Yes.
He does that to all of us.
Not to all of us.
I never felt humble.
I just found out we're definitely not a cult. And this afternoon proved it. Dick Schmidt looked up cult, and a cult, as opposed to a religion, a cult says there's only one way to heaven, and a religion says there are many. We demonstrated there are many. There's phase 3, there's synergism, there's ultrascan, and there's energy. And I know another reason we're not a cult. Michael Pozzola asked people if they'd all have their left breast cut off, and only 3 volunteered.
Big
Molly. You'll get that when you read your follow-up. You'll understand more about that. Okay. How many of you got caught up in the wave of enthusiasm which permeates the country but especially dominates New York area of trip handicapping? Somebody will admit it. Probably half of you got caught up, but only this gentleman is honest enough to admit it. How effective have you found trip handicapping? Since you're the only one doing it.
Marginal. It takes a lot of work. You have to view the... I used to VCR the results and then spend a lot of time making notes. And
do you have a lot of friends who trip handicap?
No.
Have you ever heard 2 of them agree on what they saw? When I moderated a trip handicapping symposium at Expo 84, and my opening remarks were that I thought that trip handicapping was handicapping under the influence of narcotics. And after I listened to some of the trip handicappers' notes, I was sure that trip handicapping was handicapping under the influence of something, because they were the most ferociously argumentative with each other that I've ever heard. However, you will notice if you look at some of the trip handicapping videotapes that one of the more eminent trip handicappers finds Chris McCarron coming up behind another horse and clipping that horse's heels and almost going down. And the trip handicapper says, "Look there, another example of jockeys playing games." That doesn't sound funny to you? You get more laughs with cutting off the left breast. The perception of trip handicappers is highly subjective. If they happen to be conspiratorial in their nature, they will see conspiracies. Apparently, I know Tom does, he doesn't call it trip handicapping. Tom can do it. Tom can see things out there, but he always verifies what he sees with what he sees in the racing form. He does not make these huge subjective decisions based on watching the race. I have no trouble because I can't tell which horse is which. Because I couldn't trip handicap. But there is a way of trip handicapping in the racing form which we tried to convey to you in a series of articles. You can see more by seeing fractional differentials. And that's why this engine is so vital to you. If you see a horse that usually runs a turn time in X and he does not run to his usual turn time, you can know that he had some trouble and the first fraction are on the turn. You just know that because that's your very, very reliable fraction. No matter what the horse feels like, he'll try to make his best move on the turn if he's a turn time horse. It's a very reliable fraction because it's a behavioral pattern. We did an experiment on this over thousands of races, and in sprints and one turn routes, the consistency of turn time had the least deviation of any other fraction. This is why I urge you to get that program we used to make our profile with, the engine. We got so many programs, I got to do a mental rehabilitation every time I mention one for fear I'll say par generator or something. But the engine's the program. And you've asked what it costs. It's going to cost $49 to everybody but you. It's $25 to you who came to the seminar. And if you go to the banquet, we might give it to you for $20. Providing you applaud at the right moments. Wait, save it for tomorrow night, folks. Bert Main's tuning up his guitar even as we speak. I suggested some of the energy group this afternoon, which will sound like a lot of work to you, but if you really want to reach the kind of proficiency that Brohammer and these other people have, do you think that Tom started out by just, that's the pace line, and bang, bang, bang? No. He analyzed hundreds of pace lines, and he would take a horse off of several pace lines to see the degree of consistency. That's how he knows. He knows a lot of things. He says, I don't use this and I don't use that. He's using it subconsciously. Subconsciously, he's doing PBS. Subconsciously, he's doing APV in class. But he's done it so long and so often, he knows by looking at the numbers. And the way you do that is through practice. And by doing these things ritualistically by rote. My suggestion is that on long winter nights or at some time in your life when you have a few hours, you take a lot of racing forms and you start off by putting pluses, O's, and pluses within an O's on a horse's form and taking two or three of those plus lines and seeing how close they are, seeing what the horse usually does. If there's a deviant one in those three, scratch that and look at the two out of the three that are non-deviant. It'll give you a picture of what that horse usually does. The biggest problem we have in pace line selection, I think, is in our worry about it, is that maybe this line is not reflective of what the horse is going to do. Remember Tom said this afternoon, take the line that is most predictive of what he'll do today. How do you know that that's a predictive line of what he'll do today? Is by understanding the pace lines he runs when he's running well. By the same token, you can take pluses within an O race and see how he's coming into form, how he looks. And this would be a terrible thing to make a career out of doing, because it'd take you four times as long to do a race. But those especially of you who have IBM or compatibles or any desktop computer with scratching ability, if you do this for a time, you will train your subconscious to automatically see it. And the only reason why some of us are doing 70, 80% on certain occasions and consistently doing at least 67% is not because we are better than you as handicappers. It's just that we have practiced and practiced and practiced and have learned from what we've practiced. So if you keep practicing and keep looking at these pace lines, you will perceive things that you won't perceive if your motive is get the damn pace line out of the way real fast so we can see who's going to win. You can do it fast as Jimmy Bradshaw, who does it like, that's the winner. But you can't do it. Jimmy will tell you how many thousands, I'm literally thousands of races he put through the computer, because in Oklahoma there was no racing. Blue Ribbon Downs finally opened. But before that, he had to go to Louisiana and places, and he would take week-long sojourns, but he'd have weeks and weeks to study before he could go to the track. And he did thousands of races, and that's how he can pick a pace line so deftly right now. And I'm sure the same thing is true with Tom and all the people who are proficient. They practiced. They practiced. And that's what does it. Practicing. And that teaches your subconscious to react automatically. Now, why do we use the pluses and the O's and the pluses? A speed rating of 80 or better. This will keep you from throwing out horses who do not appear to have run well, but who ran fast but finished badly or didn't look too good because the horses they were running against were so far superior. The reason we chose 80 is that, believe it or not, if you take all the tracks in the United States and Canada and average them up, the average winner's speed rating is 80. Now, you might say, well, that's low for my track, but just remember, that's the average across the nation, winter, summer, spring, and fall. So, since we have to choose a number, let's choose 80. Doesn't mean that you automatically, oh boy, there's a sleeper, I'm going to bet that horse. But you'll find that horses who register 80s, and the more consistently they do it, the more apt, if properly placed by their owner trainers, will do well. Some horses consistently do bad with high speed ratings because their owners and or trainers have high expectations for them and keep putting them in over their head. But you look at the rest of the field and you find horses that have been winning at around 80, and you've got this horse that looks like a dog who's 80, well, he's just as fast as they are. We have one race in one of our manuals in which the best winner in the field had a 76 and the other horse had an 80, and to me it was a lock to show, and he did. So if you look at pluses, O's, and pluses within an O, and you don't take any races and put them in your computer that are not plus or plus within an O, you will be eliminating those horses who are deadwood. A lot of you would say, when you say I get my third and fourth choices are winning, first place I say, what constitutes your choice? And secondly, who are you putting in above these horses that makes the better horses come out third and fourth? And usually, it is some horse you took off a zero pace line, but you liked his name or he had a good fraction or something. And all he does is clutter up the readouts on the horses that you should have first or second in your choice pattern. So watch the horses you put in. We tell this to the energy people, but it's just important to everyone. You must, in order to get a proper balance in your computer program, put in the best early, who has a chance to finish the race, the one that's going to set the pace all the way to the second call. That doesn't mean you have to put in some horse that runs 21-1 and then a 47, but put in the best early. Put in the best late. Put in the best sustained, which may also be the best late. and then put in the best presser. And if you want five horses, put in the two best pressers. Some of my statistics sound like I'm real brilliant, but I got this one from Tom Rohammer, who studied it, and my studies agreed with it. The bulk of races in the United States are won by pressers. 67% of all races are won by pressers. Now, why did Quirin's study say that 64% were won by early speed horses? Because Quirin's definition of early speed is first, second, or third, or within three lengths of the pace setter at the second call. To us, that is not early paced. We all know that that offers a wide latitude and could include a closer. Pressers win most of the race. So be sure you pay a lot of attention to pressers. This is why we had you do the ESP, which you won't have to do anymore when you get your engine, the velocity engine. It'll give you the programs that you're using, version of ESP and early presser and sustained presser. So try to with those pluses and O's, and pluses within an O will help you designate which pace line to use. If you're still putting in pace lines from O's, ask yourself why. And if you can look in the mirror and say, hey, why am I doing that? And if the mirror says anything but why don't you correct this habit, then get yourself a new mirror. Okay. We went around the country and we had to make a rule for ourselves. We had to sit down. I'll never do this again. This takes 10 years off your life. We went to five different cities and did what was called trackside clinics, in which we ended up, any way you spell it, we ended up having to pick the horses. We tried to pass it off on the people, but they weren't buying it. I mean, it was us. Well, we had one day in the 14 we did this where we did not make money, where we did not do 70%. Fortunately, that one day was in Omaha, where we had an advanced group of people who were doing very well on their own. If it had been in any other city, we'd all be residing in Brazil now, or working for Dick Mitchell or something. Fortunately, and in one instance, only because Michael Basola shut his mouth and worked the computer for us, sacrificed his showmanship for the group, for which we'll be forever appreciative. Oh, I didn't mean to say anything nice. I thought you were out of the room. And we chose to take these steps. And without deviation, APV first and class, pluses, O's, and plus within an O with the addition of the 80 speed rating. ESPs, because at that time nobody had a program that would do it for them, and PBS. We left out, in 106 races, Dick put it in the follow-up, was 95, it was 106 races by count. We left out 8 horses, but 2 of them got scratched in. In other words, they qualified after scratches. We left out only 6. And we did 3 of them in one day. That was that day we didn't have such a good day. So that's very few. It is about 96% of the winners included, 5 different cities, 106 races. None of the cities we went to were very familiar. To me, Los Angeles was the most unfamiliar. I've always devoted this method to not being a Southern California method, so I pay very little attention to Southern California races. I spend my time when I go doing New York, the Midwest, Timonium, Suffolk, Narragansett, Barrington Fair, you name it. So we had very, very optimal success by just using these factors. And as I said, a track profile prepared for us by the group that was there. So between this process and the NGEN profile, we looked like, except on that one day, we looked like heroes. And mostly the people were very polite, but the bottom line was if we lost any races or lost more than, if we didn't do 70%, people would lose their faith. And I don't think that's the way to go anymore. I don't think it should be up to us to have to do 70% for people to have faith in their method. After you heard Dan Duran this morning, I think you should all understand that the responsibility lies with you. Once it's been demonstrated that it can be done, you should feel responsible. You shouldn't want anybody to pick your races or do your races for you. These seminars are far more valuable to the recipients than these trackside clinics in which everybody keys themselves up to get a horse and go out and bet it and pay for the price of the clinic. Good example was in Chicago, there were 85 people. 20 of them came just to get horses. We gave them 6 out of 8 or 8 out of one of, what was the 8 out of 10 in one case and 7 out of 9 in the other, depending if you played the. And none of them showed up. They went and made their bets, took their money, went home, and never saw them again. My daughter said, "Who were these people?" People came in who weren't even clients. They sneaked in. "Hey, don't give us all that analysis to who's going to win a race." And I never heard that at one of our seminars before. I was getting so upset, but Dick Schmidt, who gets upset better than anybody, he told him, "Shut up. You don't like it, get the hell out of the room." My sentiments exactly. Anybody who comes to a seminar to have somebody pick their horses from them is not a certain client. You can go for $20, you can get a donut, a bear claw, all the coffee you can drink in a program, and any day at any track, for $20, you can get the whole card picked for you. So if anybody, I don't think there's anybody in this room like that, but if anybody wants someone else to do it, believe me, just look in the newspaper ads and the racing forum ads, you can always get someone else to do it. Richard Diamond is not... On Wall Street, Richard Diamond buys for himself, has his own business, and does not tout stocks or go to someone else to have them touted for him. He is a handicapper of stocks and buys for himself and does not sell his selections. I try to buy his selections. I said, "Richard, I'll give you $50,000. Just bet it for me, will you? In the stock futures." "Howard, I don't do that. I buy for myself." "Gee, did I have egg on my face?" All right, I'm going to do the third fraction for you, then PBS, and Jimmy will do his own version of the matchup, but just because he's Jimmy, it won't sound like anything you've heard before. Why the third fraction? Why all this excitement about the third fraction? What happened was, I always write the third fraction down on the racing form. I do it by hand, by eyeball, and then I confirm it.